Hey, Warlocks, it's Johnny Dim, and just a couple words before we get started with the episode. This is episode 84. Welcome. We are doing Extra Life on November 7th at 8 a.m. for 24 hours for charity. It's for kids, sick kids. It's a good cause. Donate, watch the stream. Links below. In this episode, we do push the envelope a little bit. My apologies. That's my fault. If you think it's funny, well, thank you.
Adult.
Adult penises?
We cannot air this. Quis custodiet ipsos custodiet America. You've just stumbled into yet another war pod, brought to you in part by the Space City Nerd Network, Musings of a Geek, the Four-Eyed Radio Network, and the Houston Nerd Casting Collective. I'm Zach Nanimus.
I'm Johnny Dim.
Let's dive in. Tonight, we count down to Extra Life for the, fifth week in a row. Luke Skywalker takes a walk on the dark side, and we reveal our top three fan theories of all time! But first, Squirrel Girl is no longer a mutant. If you're not a long-standing fan of the show, the fact of the matter is you might not know who Squirrel Girl is. So I think it bears repeating, just in case there's anybody who may be a new viewer. But
you're her biggest fan, so you do it.
I really am. In 1988, there was an Invincible Iron Man comic book that featured a rambunctious mutant female named Doreen Green, a.k.a. the Squirrel Girl, who had heightened strength, agility, razor-sharp claws that she could use for defense and to climb trees, and she could communicate, not control, but communicate with squirrels. In this story, she was actually injecting herself into one of Iron Man's adventures in hopes that this would be sort of her audition to be his new sidekick, which, by the way, would have made the best comic ever, The Adventures of Iron Man and Squirrel Girl. Nevertheless, they wind up fighting Dr. Doom, and Dr. Doom has got him dead to rights, and Squirrel Girl beats the crap out of him. And ever since this unlikely scenario has played out in front of the Marvel audience, they've decided, basically writers in general have decided that for no particular reason, Squirrel Girl is the most effective hero in the Marvel Universe. She even got her own title, a la the Invincible Iron Man, the Amazing Spider-Man. She is the unbeatable Squirrel Girl, and I just love her.
And I, in turn, just because I guess through some type of, I don't know, is that osmosis? That I've built up an appreciation for her through your love of her.
I don't think that's the case. I think you're just seeing the truth.
Yeah, that might be it too. But I wasn't as informed about her before you introduced me to her.
Before I said all that just now.
yeah, just now. Now I love her. No, you've gone on about her before. In fact, I went and tried to find you a Squirrel Girl comic, and I found one that she was mentioned in, and she was a babysitter for Luke Cage. But anyway, all that aside, so the new thing is that they've somehow, I think, in the comics declared that she was not a mutant. Therefore, her rights, as far as her movie rights, are not stuck with, who's it, Fox? Fox has all the mutants?
Yeah, Fox has the X-Men and the Marvel Mutant brand. Which is why Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch were simply called Enhanced. It's really about the word mutant. They can't say it.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah. this was actually in Squirrel Girl's new comic book, which I think is titled The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
Right. So now, how excited are you that you might see her on the big screen?
I expected to not like the fact that it was happening, but I thought about it and I was like, it actually makes much more sense for her not to be a mutant.
Mm-hmm.
Just because she's not very anchored in the X-Men universe. You know, the fact that they took like Quicksilver and stuff like that, that was weird. You know, and the fact that they changed them all up didn't make too much sense in the context of what we know about Quicksilver. For Squirrel Girl seems like too specific for a mutant. Right. Like you look at characters like Wolverine, and the thing that's most Wolverine-y about him is his heightened sense of smell, and that's it. You know?
Yeah.
Squirrel Girl has literally got all the squirrel stuff going on. So you almost think that this would have to happen by design. But that's not what they did in the comic books. In Squirrel Girl, I think it was issue one, they said that while it was a genetic deformity that that caused her to have squirrel powers, she is technically not a mutant. There is a difference between what happened to her and what happened to every other mutant on Earth.
Right.
Which is to say they didn't explain it. Perhaps they'll parlay this into something that's cooler, and we will learn that perhaps she was changed by, I don't know, maybe the Vulture or the Jackal or, gosh, Purple Man. I don't know. Who else can do it?
That would be nice to see her, right, in the Netflix series. You could have her spin off of Jessica Jones.
I'm trying. Okay. The thing about seeing her in film is that
actually, Netflix would not be a good place for her. It's too gritty there. At least with the existing IPs that are there.
First and foremost, we are going to see a dichotomy in these stories as soon as Iron Fist hits the scene.
Sure.
There's no two ways about that, because they have been really faithful to the comics.
Uh-huh.
They've done their letter best to make them both modern stories and actually really fit into the universe that we know and love really well. And Iron Fist is about a white kid who found a mountain that only exists on Earth when it comes out of its pocket dimension every so many years, and his first adventure was fighting the great dragon Fin Fang Foom.
Right.
So
that's the one that really, it's really out there as far as those IPs that are on Netflix as far as Marvel goes.
Yeah, they're either going to have to throw a lot of that out or embrace its ridiculousness.
Either way, I hope it should be good. I mean, I can't imagine it being bad.
The thing is that the martial arts films that we love are the result of meditation and planning and really sort of a perfect storm of timing and talent finding its way onto the set. They've tried martial arts shows before, and they all cross the board, and this is just the medium. They look like Power Rangers.
Sure.
Because, you know, you're producing, what, 22 kung fu fight sequences in a row? You know?
Yeah. And
they did it successfully with
Kung Fu, right?
No. David Carradine, who was Bruce Lee's character. No.
I had fond memories of that show. That's why I said that one.
Are you talking about the one from the 90s?
Yeah.
So not the original. Kung Fu, The Legend Continues.
The Legend Continues, correct. Yeah.
Okay. they did it really well in Daredevil. I don't know why I couldn't think of his name. They did it well in Daredevil, but with Daredevil, it was really about volume. He was doing amazing things against people who could do nothing to him, except for harm him because they had numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But Iron Fist is very much a story about martial artists.
Yeah.
So these are going to have to be highly choreographed fight sequences. But, you know, maybe it will work because Netflix doesn't go by the traditional schedule. They drop series on you whenever they're ready. Not when it's, you know, sweeps week or whatever.
Exactly.
So I don't know. I guess there's a reason to be optimistic about
it. Okay. Here's the question. If she were to be thrown into the Marvel MCU of sorts, either the Netflix or whatever, what's your ideal scenario? What do you see being executed best? Like maybe a team up, like she shows up briefly, like kind of what they're doing with Spider-Man, where they tease her a little bit or tease him, whatever. And then she gets her own movie, or stay in a team up movie like a bigger team up movie like Avengers or whatever.
I'll start logically. The best thing for her is to be in a team up movie,
okay,
or a team up series. I don't think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I kind of fell out of love with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't know what it was.
I had some issues with it, but I've only watched a few seasons of or a few episodes of season one.
Season one is really good, but I don't know. I've seen bits and pieces of season two and a few full episodes, and I don't know. Coulson has kind of become a caricature. So I would really hope that she shows up in something. I'd love to see her in the series or the season finale of, I cannot think of names today, the bee from Apartment 23.
What?
Marvel.
The bee from Apartment 23?
It took the bee from Apartment 23 and they put her in a Marvel series and now she's super strong.
Jessica Jones?
Jessica Jones. I would love to see her in the finale of Jessica Jones where it's like she's got Purple Man's got Jessica Jones dead to right. He's, I don't know, taken over the minds of like an entire block of New York through some enhancement device. And Squirrel Girl just saunters in and beats the crap out of him because she cannot be tamed. Not even by mind control.
I like that scenario.
Well, it takes a little bit away from Jessica Jones, but, you know, if she's going to show up, she's going to overshadow Jessica Jones quite a bit.
Because she's unbeatable.
Mm-hmm.
Unbeatable.
I'm a squirrel, damn it. It's a miracle. By the way, Ellie Kemper, I believe I'm saying her first name right. I know I'm saying her last name right because it's a variant of one of my names, actually. Mm-hmm. I would love for her to play Squirrel Girl. I think she is the logical choice.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's absolutely brilliant. I haven't thought of that until just now. That's awesome. I like that.
What do you think? Do you think that she should be introduced in the Marvel Cinematic Universe or the small screen?
The logical thing for me was I would almost think that I would imagine that the Spider-Man introduction is going to be somewhat successful. I mean, everyone loves Spider-Man. I think he's showing up. We would have liked for him to show up earlier in the MCU, but it's kind of makes sense because he is such a large figure in the universe that it makes sense for it to be a little bit later. So I think that we should introduce him, see how that goes, and then I like to see her maybe show up in, because I believe now they split the Civil War into two movies. I believe.
Did they?
I think. Don't quote me on that. But I do know that some of the other ones, like in the Infinity War or whatever, I know they split that one up into two. One of those movies, maybe Inhumans. I'm not sure exactly where she would fall in the timeline, because these things can take some time, you know, casting and whatever. But one of those movies, I think she should show up in.
Inhumans was one of those ideas that was strange enough that they were like, oh yeah, Squirrel Girl can fit in there.
Yeah,
so I've seen that buzzing around.
Exactly, yeah. Which makes perfect sense. Have her show up maybe even more than you would expect, like a small cameo like that. Maybe more like a, you know, half an hour of the movie or 20 minutes of the movie. Make her a constant thing. And then I say give her her own movie. Origin story, but you can do that. You can do like kind of what Wolverine I think has done, where he has his own movie. It's of a time period that's modern and it's congruent with the other stuff that's going on in the MCU, but have those flashbacks or whatever. You know, kind of build her story in one movie, because I think she's one of those characters. It's kind of like I don't want to say Iron Man. But it's one of those characters, because Iron Man wasn't a big, huge deal in the Marvel comics. I mean, he was a mainstay. He was a main character, but he wasn't
one of the founding members of the Avengers.
That's true, but he didn't get the play that Spider-Man got. You know, he didn't hit his big debut until the live action movie. Then he became a phenomenon.
Are we going to say that? I mean, he had a Saturday morning cartoon. Actually, he's had three that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't mean Spider-Man. I was saying Iron Man.
Oh, Iron Man? Iron Man had a Saturday morning cartoon before the movies.
Well, either way, I've got a better example. Let's say somebody like Punisher. Punisher was not a household name. I mean, he had a movie back in the 80s, and people kind of knew who he was. But Squirrel Girl, I think at this point is even lesser known than Punisher was even back then, but Punisher
was he had his own game.
Right, yeah. But he was also just kind of thrown into the movie started coming out, people started recognizing and knowing who he was. Anyway, so my point is, I think Squirrel Girl could be like she could come from left field and kind of take the public by storm. Like, they wouldn't even know what hit them, because they're like, yes, this makes too much sense. It's so much fun to watch this girl with squirrel powers beat the crap out of people like you're talking about Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
Like people love that idea.
The first time we talked about introducing her into the cinematic universe, I was actually talking with Joe, friend of the show, and he wants her introduced at the end of Infinity Wars.
Okay.
And it'd be very much the Jessica Jones scenario that I just put up. The Avengers are decimated. They are not going to win this thing. And she just hops out of a portal, probably with like a Pym Tech a portal gun, and just clocks him across the jaw. Not even claws. Not even using her abilities.
Yeah. No. And what I would love about that, if they did it right, at least in my mind, the perfect scenario would be something like that. But you didn't notice it before, but as soon as she shows up, you realize that there's been little squirrel cameos throughout the entire movie.
Yes, because they are her, and I'm not being racist here, if you know your Sherlock Holmes, the squirrels actually act as her street Arabs.
Right.
They're her spy network.
Yes.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Like, if people are shooing away squirrels. I do think that to introduce her successfully in a big movie, she needs to be a mysterious figure who was purposefully hiding her squirreliness because she was afraid that nobody would take her seriously. And so I think that sometime at the beginning of the third act,
yeah,
we learn that she is indeed the Squirrel Girl, and there's a little bit of business about coming to appreciate yourself for who you are.
And coming out of the closet and just embracing that squirrelness.
And then Jessica Jones just get kicked right off of Netflix.
Exactly.
Way too much sexy. Either way. So there's that. I would like to end it by saying that ideally for me, she would not be introduced. She would be really fleshed out in a team movie before she got her own, because Squirrel Girl is going to try to inhabit the same part of the market that the Guardians of the Galaxy has. And I don't think we're ready for that.
Nah.
No, I don't think so. Because that's exactly what it would be. And also, there's not enough people. You have to shove other people from the Marvel Universe into her movie to make it a comedy.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, that's what works about comedies, is that there's always a team.
Just like you and me.
Now, Johnny.
Yes.
This is kind of a springboarding off the thing that you wanted to talk about a lot. Well, you wanted to talk about it at least once an episode, is what are we playing? And we are playing Facebook lately, because we are trying to get people excited about Extra Life.
Extra Life. Yes, Extra Life is a big deal. This is our last episode that we're going to be mentioning it. Not mentioning it. I'm sure we'll talk about the results of our Extra Life in the next episode. But this is the last episode we have until our actual stream on Saturday, November 7th, starting at 8 a.m., 24 hours of straight-up gaming. It's going to be me, Johnny Dim, you, Zach Nanimus, Jason, Edge of Blade, that's one person, and Terry Jonesy. That was clumsy. I apologize. But Terry Jonesy Jones. There,
like,
you go.
You're basically looking at Edge of Jones, Terry Mankind, Marvin Hamlish, and Ted Theodore Logan.
That's it right there.
We are.
So we are, again, real quick, first 12 hours, straight up one-player games. We're all playing RPGs-ish games. We're going to be switching every hour and a half now, so that way we each get to play each game twice. Exactly. So we will rotate. So if I'm playing, I'm going to be starting on Fallout 3. Once the hour and a half's done, I move on to the next game. Somebody else takes my spot, plays the same character. We see what we get after 12 hours. Now, I got some cool announcements for the stream. We will for sure be playing Gang Beasts and Speedrunners.
Those are cool games.
Yes, and I want to thank those companies that produce those games because they're the ones that provided those games for us to play.
Well, Johnny, why don't you drop their names on the show?
Speedrunners comes to us by the way of developer Tiny Build. Or no, that's the producer, I think. I think that one was produced and developed by the same team. And then we also have Gang Beasts, which I mentioned, which was produced by Double Fine. Mm-hmm. And then developed by Bone Loaf.
Now, Johnny, it says Gang Beasts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's actually really close to a really inappropriate thing that we're not supposed to say on the show.
Yes, but this is completely PC and the kids can watch, except we're probably going to make it inappropriate. At least I am.
Yeah, we're not supposed to say Raisin Bread on the show.
Correct.
Damn it, I said it anyway.
You just said it. You just said it. Anyway, thanks to those companies for providing those games. I'm still waiting to hear back for some more from other companies that I've reached out to, so maybe we can get some more. Maybe we won't. So, but that's big news. We're going to play the shit out of those. We're going to play... well, I just found my copy of Super Smash Bros. Melee, so that's an option. As of Left 4 Dead 2, which is really fun to play.
We'll also be playing, for the first time, Halo 5.
That is a thing.
And is that going to be with our special guest, Carrie, from the Metal Geeks?
As of now, yes, that is the plan.
Nice. And, of course, you can check out Metal Geeks on the HoustonNerdcastingCollective.com/Metal Geeks, which is probably very accurate. I was trying to say a bunch of nonsense, but you can go ahead and type that in.
I think you almost had it. It's actually... HoustonNerd.org.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you'll find all the podcasts are right there on the main page. There's a slider. It's got them on there. You'll find them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're a very accomplished podcast, and we think they're cool allies, I guess you could say.
We are humbled by their brevity.
There you go.
Yes.
So anyway, Extra Life. If you didn't know, we haven't mentioned it this time, but it actually goes towards the. Miracle Network, the Children's Miracle Network, and all of ours, from what I understand, if you donate to any of – because you actually donate to a particular player's page. So Zach has a page. I have a page. Terry has a page. And Jason has a page. You choose one of us. Go to those donation pages. You donate money. And that money goes towards Texas Children's Hospital. We've all chosen the same hospital. The player actually chooses which hospital it goes to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it actually goes to help – these kids that have been hospitalized. There's actually, you know, all these great stories that we will actually be sharing some of those. The charity has provided some videos and stuff that we might share during our stream that actually shows some of these different success stories and all this kind of good stuff about kids that have basically been diagnosed with these illnesses that are deadly, you know. So and this goes to help them through their trouble and what they're going through and their families. So anyway, it's a good cause we're doing this for, and stay tuned. There may be even some more cool stuff coming from us, stuff to get you to donate. I don't know why we need to get all this crap just to make it fancy so you feel better about your donation. You should just do it anyway.
Nice, Johnny. one other thing I would like to mention is that we are going to be streaming all 24 hours for the first 12. We will all be playing independent games, but we'll be in the same room so that audio feed will be coming from the same place. However, you'll be able to tune in on two separate channels to check out mine and Jonesy's split screen and Johnny and Jason's split screen. And if you'd like to interact with us, feel free to give us a tweet. You will find all of our accounts in the links below.
This is true.
So something else today was your big fan theory day. You wanted to talk about a lot of fan theories, which is why we're doing the top three. But I mentioned that Luke Skywalker is going to be taking a walk on the dark side in this show.
Right.
That's because a fan theory, is this new? It doesn't feel new because there's actually expanded universe novels that actually talk about him literally going to the dark side for one reason or the next.
Right, but those, it may not be new per se, but I was introduced to it by for the first time a couple days ago.
Okay, so why don't you lay out the theory for me?
Okay, so the theory goes, it's spelled out in this manner. Okay, the first thing that really made me think that maybe there's something to this thing is basically, the theory is that at the end of Return of the Jedi, Luke, there's clear indication that Luke goes to the dark side. And the first thing that made me click and say, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Hold on, let's define the end. Are we talking about his fight with Vader or after?
Well, it's throughout that entire movie. But, okay. But the point in which he actually enters the dark side and is on that side of the Force is during his confrontation with the Emperor and Darth Vader. But the first foundation of this theory is, of course, the interaction that he has with Yoda. And he has that sequence where he like destroys the imaginary Darth Vader or whatever it is.
Yoda, that was an empire.
Huh?
That was an empire.
Right. No, I understand. It's but this is where the foundation is laid.
Okay.
It's in that movie. You're right. It's a different movie. Because what Yoda tells him is he cannot go save his friends. He has to complete his training on Dagobah. And he if he leaves, then he runs that risk of going to the dark side. But he leaves anyway. And I remember one of the things they mentioned in that theory was that when he does destroy that fake Vader or whatever it was, and it, like, was it a dream? I don't even remember what it was. Do you remember?
Yeah. What's going on when he confronts Vader on Dagobah?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's going on there? this is explained in several points in the expanded universe that Yoda, when escaping the clutches of Palpatine, chose Dagobah because it is a nexus of dark side energy. It's just ridden with the dark side of the Force. So basically, what that cave was a particularly dark part of the Force.
Okay. So the cave,
it's the equivalent of like going on a spirit quest but having some bad peyote.
Gotcha. Okay. So, yes. So the cave projected that.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, what that is spelled out in the theory is that's when he, because doesn't when he break the helmet and it's like his face?
Yes. Yes, his face underneath.
Yeah, so that it's supposed to be foreshadowing about him becoming his father. And even before that, I guess I forgot one of the other things that builds basis for this thing is that even back on in the first movie, Episode 4, he aspires and his motivation is to become like his father. And at the time, he doesn't know exactly who his father is, but that's supposed to continue. Like those motivations are kind of what drives his path.
Well, Obi-Wan built him up as a great Jedi master.
Right. Right, 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 right. So he's not pursuing the father he thinks he's pursuing.
Right.
But his motivations are to meet his father, to be like his father, so on and so forth. And so with those motivations, the theory says that basically he takes this path where he wants to be like his father. He finally learns that Darth Vader is his father, and he ignores Yoda's warnings, continues that path. And Yoda knows, I think he even has a conversation with Ghost Ben Kenobi,
mm-hmm.
and says that he's going down this dark path. He's going to be
hashtag
like,
oh. Force spirits matter. I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah. So anyway, long story short, I'll get to a little bit. I'll try to go through this a little faster. He eventually confronts Vader, confronts the Emperor. There's that confrontation where they have that thing, and he's forced with another decision, kind of where he like. Because he basically embraces that dark side that the Emperor is telling him to embrace to defeat Darth Vader, and there's no indication like they don't really speak to it like at the end of the movie. And actually there was some edits done by George Lucas towards the end of that battle and towards the end of the movie that it was supposed to have a darker ending to that movie because it was clear that he did stuff that was clearly on the side of the dark.
Oh yeah. I would the most credence that I would lend to this is probably in the beginning of Return of the Jedi in his confrontation with Jabba.
That was another thing that's actually mentioned in the theory. I just didn't want to spend too much time on it, but you're right. Because he straight up lies to Jabba, which is something that normally that they wouldn't do.
He also gives him an ultimatum.
Right.
He said, he says that you're going to accept my gift of these two droids and give my friends back or die.
Right.
And he means it.
He absolutely means it.
And even at the beginning, there are two Gamorreans that he winds up. They don't say what he does, but the trappings of everything that happens in that incident says he's force choking people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which he had just mind tricked a Twi'lek.
Exactly.
And Twi'leks are pretty. They're pretty savvy. You know, they're a technological race. They're actually very good at communicate at interpersonal communications and stuff like that, which is why they're so often entertainers and concierges, things like that. He mind tricked him. So I think he probably could have handled just mind tricking the Gamorreans, but that's not what he chose to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he saw two people with weapons. He was like, this is the safer option. Bam.
Right.
Lots of people say that these two survived. Sir Luke choking them, but you know, that's never addressed.
Right. And the other thing, at the very end, when it's supposed to be like the final nail in the coffin for this theory, is that Luke, during that fight with Vader, realizes his own power and how powerful he can be, and his idea is to destroy the Emperor and rule the galaxy with as father and son with Darth Vader and Luke. And that's supposed to be something that goes through his head, you know, according to the theory, and which is why, you know, he proceeds like he does.
I don't know about that, because he tosses his lightsaber to the side immediately after cutting off Vader's hand. So this wasn't going to be a confrontation in his mind. He knew that he wasn't going to be able to intimidate the Emperor. He knew that much, because at this point he was already strong enough with the Force to, you know, use visible powers and even manipulate minds. So he had a sense of how powerful the Emperor was.
Right.
He was just bluntly refusing to go along with the rest of the Emperor's plan.
Right. And I think, cause he does say, like, he stops. Correct.
Like he chops off Vader's hand?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does.
Like, he just stops fighting. Mm-hmm. And there was supposed to be a part of the theory where he basically, he tells the Emperor that he's not going to do it or whatever, or he's not going to do what he wants, blah, blah, blah. And I remember the theory saying that this was actually him manipulating Darth Vader into doing what he ended up doing, which was chunk the Emperor off the ledge. And that's probably the most hard to believe part of the theory.
It's a possibility, but if that's the case, then what he was doing was, sorry, I leaned away. That's a possibility, but if that's what he was doing, then this manipulation was in the pursuit of the light side of the Force. I've never liked that term, but so that we have a good binary for this. That would be him saying, hey, I'm going to be good even if you try to kill me. Dad, what are you going to do about it? You know?
Right.
I think if the manipulation is there, then he was still trying to save Vader.
Okay.
Which is why he came there.
Right.
Which he allowed himself to be escorted to that installation.
It's true.
Yeah.
Either way, with its holes and all, what do you think of the theory?
I think that in the context of the fandom, not the story. The story is much simpler than any fan would like to admit. I think that in the context of the fandom, all of the Jedi that we give two craps about have all dabbled in the dark side at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that Obi-Wan in episode one, probably sourced a bit of the dark side during his fight with Darth Maul. A lot of what we've learned about Jedi over, you know, all of the expanded universe, video games, etc., is that Jedi forego emotion, where Sith embrace it. Uh-huh. And he was definitely fueled by rage in the Duel of the Fates immediately after Qui-Gon died. Let's see, Luke, you know, force choking pig people and dropping doors on Rancors and kissing his sister. Come on.
Yeah, that's a big one right there.
Yeah, I would say that any good Jedi probably dabbles in the dark side.
Okay.
I mean, Yoda himself dabbles in deception.
That's true.
Actually, he doesn't even dabble in deception. It's almost like the foundation of his character by the time the prequels are done. With the walking stick that he doesn't need and stuff like that.
Right.
Which he even makes a point. He kind of cements that in the second movie where he's like, if learned that we can no longer see the future, grow our enemy's will or something. So you get a sense that, you know, Yoda's willing to manipulate the facts in order to build up the Jedi because he believes in them that much. In the context of the story, they're just being people.
Sure.
People do this. No Jedi is perfect. And honestly, this goes back to something that I've been saying for a long time. Paragons are boring. Superman is boring. Until you put him into those situations where he no longer has the moral high ground, which honestly, I don't think they've adequately done in a long time. It can be fun.
He had to kill Zod.
Okay, Superman kills people left and right in the comics. He doesn't care. He realizes that some people are beyond redemption, and he mega punches them until there is naught but aether left in their wake.
Okay.
Yes. he does. There's actually, I think I've talked about this several times on the show, in the Crisis on Infinite Earths, there are actually two Supermen, and they're both killing people, and they talk about it. Like, one of them says, we have to kill them all.
Right. What do you suspect that Luke's frame of mind and correlation is with light and dark sides, if you want to say that, is in the start of episode 7.
Having nothing to go on in the past 40 years.
Well, you have a small itty bitty tidbit, and that is small
itty bitty tidbit.
Yeah,
what are you trying to say, Johnny?
Nothing. I'm not trying to say anything about.
I got a dual phase lightsaber. It's a grower, not a shower.
Ooh. Well, that's something special. So what I'm talking about that you're having to go on is that in the trailers they don't show his face. You're assuming that the one figure they show that's hooded and around a campfire, assumably a hermit of the types, is Luke. Yeah,
a hermit of the types.
Yes, a hermit of the types. it's a new alien race.
Okay. Assuming that he's gone all hermity,
mm-hmm.
And also right now we have to take Han Solo's word on that the Force has become a distant memory. Also, huge buildup of the First Order, so there's possibly like even more Jedi hunting going on now. Honestly, I bet he's gray. I bet he's a gray Jedi. I bet if we're looking at a scenario where once again the Jedi have to build themselves up, which seems probable. It's not what I want to happen, but it seems probable. If we're looking at that, then Luke has seen the full spectrum. He has seen how important the light side is, but he also respects the power of the dark side and lives in this sort of limbo of realism, understanding, yes, it would be nice if we could all be light side, but the truth is that the power of the dark side is going to win out a lot as well.
Okay. No, I like that. I think my inkling was I was kind of hoping that he was a dark side type of figure. And I feel like I think
you wish everybody was dark side.
No, that's a DC villain. That's something completely different.
You just wish that Chewie would just dye his hair black and start wearing Andre the Giant t-shirts. Listen to Five for Fighting. I don't know if that's an emo thing. I've never heard their music.
It's sappy Canadian stuff, I think.
There we go.
They had one hit song. Okay. So, given that, blah, 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 it's time for a top three.
Top three! Two nights, top three. Since we've been talking about, we've been talking ad nauseum about Luke Skywalker potentially going to the dark side and that being part of a big fan theory, obviously the movie wants you to think one specific thing. Our top three is top three fan theories. Why don't we go ahead and start with the top? Johnny Depp.
Oh, yay, me first. Okay.
Oh, side note, Johnny, what you drinking?
I'm drinking a Black River Gumbo Ale.
Black River Gumbo Ale. Who's it by?
Some kind of organic. Peace Tree Brewing. They're from Knoxville, Iowa.
Knoxville, Iowa?
Yes.
We need to start a competitive brand, and that would be Battle Bush in Paris, Texas.
I love that idea. Although I don't think anything grows in Paris, Texas.
Gumbo. How is it gumbo? Does it pair well with gumbo, or does it have scrimp and venison?
Well, the thing about gumbo is it's
fresh
like...
fresh vegetables.
The thing about gumbo is I think it's like spaghetti sauce in a lot of ways. Like everybody has their own recipe.
Okay. There just happens to be beer.
Yeah. Yes. This is our take on gumbo. But it is it's a dark beer. It's definitely a stout of sorts, which makes sense for a gumbo. I could see a gumbo pairing well with this, the right gumbo. It would definitely – hold on. It says this dark deliciousness is named after the gumbo dirt of Des Moines River. The Des Moines River bottom, which nourished our Peace Tree and is now used as the surface of Knoxville's famous sprint car track. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, Belgian yeast. Oh, interesting.
I stopped listening a while ago. Johnny Dim, are you ready for an obscure 90s reference?
Do it. Do it now.
On a scale of 1 to high quality H2O, because of Creole.
Yeah, I gotcha. No, I'm right there with you.
Where's this beer?
It's a, it's the devil.
That's an average. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, top three fan theories. Johnny Dim.
Top three fan theories. Go. Okay. I got three honorable mentions real quick.
Okay.
Anton Chigurh. I'm probably saying that way wrong. It's the real scary evil guy in No Country for Old Men.
Mm-hmm.
The theory is that he is the angel of death sent by an Old Testament god to wreak havoc on the drug trade.
Well, at least it would give some context for the story.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that movie. Next honorable mention, the Jetsons and the Flintstones connection. This one is where the Flintstones and the Jetsons exist in the same timeline, and they're actually going on at the same time. It's just that it's way in the future, and the Jetsons are the rich people, and the Flintstones are the poor people that live on the Earth. So it's like a post-apocalyptic type of thing with the Flintstones.
Yeah, there's actually a through line in their mashup movie I had as a kid.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's cool. Next honorable mention. I really like this one. If there wasn't such an awesome top three, then I would have put it with one of my top three. The James Bond is only a moniker. So it's the James Bond 007 name is passed on from agent to agent. And that's usually the top agent of, the British Secret Service.
It would provide at least a flimsy reason why a secret agent says his full name to everybody he meets.
Right. Right. All right. Now the big stuff, the cool stuff. And we've talked about this one before, so I won't spend a lot of time on it, but I love it so much I had to put it in my top three. And this is where Agent Smith is the one in the Matrix movies.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I love that one.
Did you hear about that one from Game Theory?
Oh, yeah, we talked about it before. Film Theory is great. This one is particularly good. Go check it out. In fact, links below on that one, too.
Matt Pat, open invitation to the show, by the way. I love all of his stuff.
Yeah, we should get him on the show.
That would be cool.
Now I believe I can get anybody on the show.
Dude, we've had crazy people on the show. Some people are just nice and say yes.
Yeah, which is a lesson to all of you. It doesn't hurt to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I wanted there to be a joke so bad there just wasn't.
yeah, you'd really have to be pulling teeth to get that one. Huh? Okay, I said
it never hurts to ask a prostitute.
There you go. You did it. Good job.
It does. Okay.
Okay. Number two is actually the one we just talked about, the Luke Skywalker turned dark side. I actually really like this. I think there's more details that I missed in the actual theory, so I suggest you go read it. It may make sense to you.
There are books about him turning to the dark side. So
yeah, but they're not canon.
Why does anybody care? Why? They didn't burn the books. This isn't Indiana Jones 3.
Okay, you are well aware of my love for rules.
Ugh.
And so that's where my trust of the canon comes from.
It's just an Elseworlds story now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm okay with alternate universe theories. I mean, that makes everything okay.
Yeah.
So
that's all it is.
Yeah. All right. Number one.
Oh, John Dem, I got it. You live in an alternate universe where you're allowed to enjoy whatever media you want, and it doesn't matter if it's canon or not.
There you go.
There you go.
Joker is the hero of The Dark Knight.
Interesting.
Because he breaks up the mob.
Yeah.
You know, he does that, and he stops that pesky vigilante known as the Batman, or he tries to at least. That's where he fails. But everything else makes sense.
That except actually...
Except he blew up a hospital.
Yeah, but he warned everybody.
True, he got them all out.
Yeah. He let Harvey Dent go, and what did Harvey Dent actually do? He shot the Batman, then shot himself.
True.
Or, no, wait, he jumped... No, he was thrown off a cliff.
No. Batman went after him. He was going to shoot the kid. And then Batman took him out.
Yeah, and the other thing I was just thinking about in the whole boat sequence is that he didn't blow everybody up right away. He kind of took his sweet time.
He didn't blow anybody up on the boats.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And yeah. He knew that somebody was going to try to stop him. He knew that.
Right. He was really trying to lure the Batman in. He didn't try to. But I don't know. It's
there was no reason to anticipate that Batman wouldn't.
True. That is true.
So
true.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like that one a lot.
How come they didn't can we produce tactical they're not infrared, electromagnetic waves yet.
I couldn't tell you.
I feel like we should just be able to knock out electricity in, you know, some sort of radius when necessary.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say a lot of people, part of that theory, though, a lot of people, just for various other reasons, really like looking into that scene where he actually has Harvey Dent in the hospital. And he talks about, you know, a truckload of soldiers blows up, nobody blinks an eye, you know, one gangster kills another gangster, you know, that's all fine and good. Nobody blinks an eye when that stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
And there's stuff in that speech that people really dig into. And I think that's a big part of the theory as well.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Your
top three.
My top three. Rocket launchers. That is all.
That's a good call.
Thank you. Now, number three. Another Batman one. Bruce dies at the end of Batman 3.
Yes,
The Dark Knight Rises.
I saw this one. Yeah, this one was really popular when the movie came out.
Now, this is something that they actually they teased I feel like midway through the third act, they talk about how certain systems on the Bat have been tampered with. You know,
the autopilot.
Yeah, they put a through line into it to let you know that Bruce knew what he was getting into, so he knew how to so he knew that he was going to be able to get away. Sure. But it is really fun to think that that he bites it, and the very end of the movie is just Alfred hallucinating.
Right. Yeah.
That would actually wrap up the movie for me. And I would have preferred if there had been like a busboy that passed between them, and it was Matt Damon or something.
I really hope it was Matt Damon. That would
be
cool.
Number two. Doc Brown was attempting suicide in 1955 when he invented the flux capacitor.
Yep.
This is another interesting one. I went back and I took a look at the scene. So Doc Brown invented the flux capacitor when he was hanging a clock above his toilet. He was standing on his toilet. He fell and he hit his head on the sink.
Yep.
Doesn't
compute.
It doesn't gel. If he needs to know the time while he's doing his doctoral thesis.
Doesn't he wear a watch?
Gosh. Well, pocket watches were already a thing. I don't know if wrist watches were very popular at the time.
Huh.
Oh, but I feel like I've seen enough memorabilia, and if you have the technology for a pocket watch, you have the technology for a wristwatch. So either way, he would have a way to tell time. Also, they had electric clocks by that time. I digress. If you need to know the time in the bathroom, the face of the clock needs to face the toilet.
Correct.
Because you're not spending upwards of 15 minutes peeing. I hope you're not. If you are, I guess pause the video and go to the doctor.
Please do. Are you saying that he was trying to hang himself in the bathroom?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Him hanging himself in the bathroom makes a lot more sense, especially in 1955 when lots of older homes still had plumbing that went upward. He may have found a good pipe to actually hang himself from.
There you go.
Yeah, which, you know, failed, and then he hit his head.
And then he created time travel.
Yep. In fact, it's possible that the asphyxiation actually played into that. Because, you know, it would have worked a little, and then it would have failed, and he fell. And then some people go further to say that he was standing in front of the car at some point in the movie. That's for dramatic effect. I don't care. I don't. You know, the other side to that theory is much more interesting to me. And number one, the Ghostbusters died at the end of Ghostbusters 1. I like the ones where people die. Or at least a tip suicide.
Yeah, we're discovering a trend here.
So this says that when the Ghostbusters... cross the streams while trying to defeat Gozer at the end of Ghostbusters Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, which, by the way, actually really fits. Spangler's math was correct, and they did every particle in their body did explode at the speed of light. And they Ghostbusters 2 takes place in Limbo.
Yeah.
Now, the reason that I like this, and this is something that wasn't mentioned in the theory that I read, is that Ghostbusters 2 starts with a trial. This is their final judgment, you know?
Yeah.
And it determines whether or not they'll be able to continue on as the Ghostbusters. And immediately after they become the Ghostbusters, they go on this whirlwind adventure to take out yet another ultra-powerful ghost in New York, you know? Which, you know, it's the Ghostbusters. You expect it to be implausible. But when you wrap that into it, it actually makes perfect sense. They... they escaped their final judgment and or vindicated themselves, and thusly they move on to paradise, a place where they can all hang out. Venkman and Dana wind up together, and they still get to blast ghosts.
And the Backstreet Boys are there.
Were the Backstreet Boys there?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was another movie.
That's your heaven, Johnny.
Actually, it's from This Is the End. And I thought that was one of the best endings of a movie I've ever seen.
I actually haven't seen that movie in its entirety.
I'm sorry I ruined the ending for you.
Oh, yeah. I was on the edge of my seat writing up fan fiction.
Well, you need to
trying to make sense of the disjointed This Is the End universe.
You need to watch that movie. It's really
okay. Cool. Either way, Johnny, bottom three.
Bottom three! Honorable mention, Jar Jar is a Sith Lord. This one has surfaced recently, and I think it's bunk and it's stupid, and I don't want to even dignify it. Jar Jar is a mistake, and this is people trying to justify it.
Actually, it makes sense. Lots of people blame the rise of the Empire specifically on Jar Jar Binks.
Right. Well, my response to that argument, my counter argument, if you will, is that Jar Jar is just a stupid fuck up, and that's why you can blame him. Not because he's a Sith Lord, but because he's a fucking idiot. All right, number three. RoboCop is Jesus.
That's on my list too, and it's in the three spot.
High five!
Yeah.
Did we just both clap?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. I think this one's absolutely retarded and stupid. I understand it's fun to make these fan theories, and that's fine. It's kind of fun. And most of them are complete bogus. In fact, I was just thinking to myself, actually, before I started the bottom list here, is that I want to see a movie that, like a trilogy or something like that, that actually kind of follows through with something that sounds like a fan theory. Like, it leads you to believe one thing for two movies, and the third movie, it's just like, hey, look at this, we wrapped it up, and it's this left field thing that you didn't see coming. Usually, if it's a twist ending, it's at the end of a movie. It's not like at the end of a trilogy.
Although, yeah, that would be much better.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and talk about it now, since it's also in my three spot.
Go ahead.
RoboCop Jesus, it makes some sense. Mm-hmm. It does. You know, it's about an entity that rises from the grave and then is the savior to all. The only and even Paul Verhoeven, the director of the movie, he said that. He was like, yeah, RoboCop's supposed to be a Jesus analog. The only problem is that that's not how Jesus worked. Jesus was our savior Gosh, that was that's like, you know what? Edit that out. That was too religious to say. Jesus in the Bible was a savior up until his death. And his death was his final sacrifice, which made it to where everybody gets like a free McRib. I don't know. I didn't read it. No, original sin has thusly been forgiven. At the end. So he didn't like turn water into wine and turn fish into more fish and, you know, cure the blind after his death. He wasn't out patrolling the streets. That would all have been the beginning, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's not a clear enough parallel for me.
Right. No, you're right. And yeah, the timelines don't match up, but I mean, people use the, Messiah type character, in different iterations, like they're inspired by that story. Like I've told it on this podcast before, Adam Warlock was the same type of thing. Adam Warlock exists because the creators at the time were listening to a lot of what's that? The rock and roll Jesus, Jesus Christ Superstar.
No, you're thinking of Woody Woodpecker and Friends.
Either way, whatever story it was, although I like that version better. You know, we don't get enough Woody Woodpecker these days.
There's a reason, Johnny.
Why? Is it just not a good character?
It's penises, man.
Oh.
Yeah, just be showing penises to kids, even if it's not a penis. It's a penis when it's Woody Woodpecker.
Have we tried that yet as a society?
Just show our genitals to children?
Yeah, I think at this point...
We have. In fact, we wrote a little story about it. It's called Indecent Exposure and Sexual Assault Against a Child. You can find it in Law, which is a pretty good book. I don't know if you read it. It's a bestseller.
I was just okay. We don't have to necessarily try with penises, but I just think we should be experimenting at this point with our bringing up our children. Just to
Johnny,
see
there's no Band-Aid that you can put on this context that's going to make it sound good.
Okay, if I can't repair the damage, let me just at least clarify. I didn't mean touching the children with the penises. That's something completely different.
Johnny,
I can't make this better, can I?
Oh, okay. Johnny, I just need you to say out loud, we should children and our genitals should not interact in any way. I just need you to say that to me.
Okay. Children and penises should not ever interact in any way.
Adult
penises?
We cannot air this.
I think we can. We can make it work. I'll just bleep everything out.
Children.
You'll just hear bleep, children, bleep, bleep, children. And
okay, now I have to say stuff. Children should be guarded from sexuality. And that's it.
That got out of hand real quick. No, we're not advocating anything that is bad. We're just making stupid jokes. At least I am. You're trying to stop me from doing it because yes. That's probably the safer thing to do. Anyway, where was I? RoboCop Jesus?
Yeah, we hadn't gotten out of three.
I was talking about the Adam Warlock thing because it was, it's people can be inspired by the story of Jesus and make Messiah characters without it actually being Jesus. I think that's the line that was crossed in this particular thing. He can say inspired by, it makes some sense in some weird alternate universe. And there's that alternate universe thing, which is fun. Let's play with alternate universes instead of children. Number one, any fan theory where the main character is said to just be dreaming or imagining whatever happened during the movie?
That took my number one spot.
You're shitting me.
No, I got it right here. I said anything similar to Mario 2.
Wait, Mario 2?
Yeah.
What was Mario? Oh, like the video game?
Yeah.
Right, I think we've talked about this before, because Mario 2 is like a...
it's all a dream.
It's supposed to be all a dream, yeah. Yeah, and there's a bunch of these. There's a lot of these where... I remember I read one today that was like Indiana Jones, the fourth movie... Crystal Skull is like the entire movie. Everything was imagined, and Indiana Jones was stuck in a that refrigerator at the end.
Yeah,
And that was the entire movie. That's just him imagining everything else, like he was hallucinating and stuff. Like there's a lot of those.
All of Indiana Jones is Han Solo while he's frozen in carbonite.
Right,
things like that. And I mean, the reason I don't like them for me is that
it's the whole Dallas thing.
It's not just the Dallas thing for me. It's the fact that either way the story is made up. It doesn't matter if a character makes it up or if the writer makes it up. It's still all made up. So what's the point of tacking on that one more level of disillusionment?
Right.
You know, what's the point unless you're going to use it?
Right.
Which now, these theories never talk about how it's used, if that's the case.
Yeah, and let me clarify something, because I think these are cheap outs. But I love it when something similar is done. Like there's the Leonardo DiCaprio movie where he is in the insane asylum. I think it takes place in like the 1920s. It's something island.
Lonely Island.
No, that's something completely different.
Treasure Island.
That's something completely different as well.
The Muppets Take Manhattan.
That's closer.
Manhattan's an island.
Yeah. Oh, Shutter Island.
Shutter Island. There you go.
Yeah. So I like movies like that where it's like you think one – and I also like M. Night Shyamalan movies. I even liked The Town. I don't care what you think, okay? I like that movie. I'm sorry. I get defensive about M. Night Shyamalan. I think he's
– I didn't know he made a movie called The Town.
Is it – no, The Village. It's the other – it's the other settlement of people.
The Hamlet.
The Hamlet, yeah.
Hell's Kitchen.
The suburb. So anyway, I like movies like that. Like in that movie, you're led to believe something for the entire movie, and in the last 5 minutes, they completely destroy everything you believe.
Right, and that's an example of these kind of fan theories working their way into the actual narrative and it being used appropriately. Yeah. I guess another example, I can't think of the name of the movie, but it's sort of like a psychological thriller horror thing where two people, I think it's called like Funny Games or something like that. Mm-hmm. And at one point it's about a home invasion where these two men are just terrorizing this family and they can't escape the house to get help for whatever reason. So they have to just go along with these, you know, horrifying and humiliating scenarios. And at one point, I think that either the mom or the dad gets a hold of a gun and shoots one of the intruders. And he's just like, "Where's the remote? Where's the remote?" And they give him the remote and he hits a button and the scene rewinds.
What?
Right? And it's like out of nowhere in this movie. It's a tiny little detail that makes you think, okay, what am I actually watching?
Right. Or Cabin in the Woods. That's another good one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and I actually looked up Funny Games, and it looks like that is the correct movie.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. It's done because it's cheap. You could say that literally about any movie. Short Circuit 2. Short Circuit 2 all takes place in the designer of Johnny Five's head, because remember how he made those little toys that were Johnny Five's? The entire movie is him just make-believing with those toys. Done. Yep.
Same thing with Harry Potter. His whole wizard life was actually an imagination. He's actually a really sad kid making this up because his life sucks.
Amadeus. Mozart was taking a snooze under a tree one day, and he dreamt up the whole drama. He dreamt up a dramatization of his life.
Batman. Batman. His parents are killed. He can't deal with the trauma. He lives in a insane asylum. This is what he imagines all day. It's him being a superhero and getting vengeance.
Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Pooh is a demon sorcerer that has jumped out of the Hundred Acre Woods, but finds our world tedious. So he writes a book about him being a nice bear.
Toy Story. The kid, whatever his name is, Andy. Just that's what he imagines his toys do when he's not around.
Yeah,
it's so on and so forth. You can do this forever.
we should write all of those down and put them up on the website.
We should. Fan theories.
Okay, number one, Johnny?
That was my number one. You just need to do your number two.
No, that wasn't your number one. What was your number two?
Oh, I skipped it.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, you're right. That was my number one.
Okay, so the dream theories actually inhabited the number one slot on yours and mine.
That's insane.
And RoboCop inhabited number three on both yours and mine.
I really doubt that our number two is the same.
We'll see.
Jack never existed in Titanic.
Ah, so close.
What was yours?
We'll get to it.
Okay. So Jack never existed on Titanic. I didn't like this one. I thought that kind of, I don't know. I think it kind of destroyed that nice old lady character, her character. And I don't mean like her character as in who she plays. I mean the character's character. I think that it just makes it all weird. And I think this one was invented only because of the holes in the movie. One being, there's enough room in that goddamn floating door, wherever the hell it was, for Jack and What's-Her-Face to be on it. I think that's the only reason this one came up and was invented. I think that it completely changes the movie. I don't think it was anyone's intention for that to be an actual option, at least the people that were involved in the making of it. And I just think it was a little bit silly. And that's what I got for that one.
Well, it is kind of interesting that there is zero evidence that Jack existed.
Well, like, they explain it, though.
They do adequately explain it. That's true.
Yeah.
It still doesn't exist, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, if you actually take that movie and you actually watch it from beginning to end, it doesn't make – I guess – everything that happens before Jack gets on the ship could have been fabricated by what's the fucking character's name?
Rose Tyler.
Yeah, Rose.
Noble.
She could have invented him, you know, and made up what and just fantasize or just imagined what he was doing before he got on the ship. But if you take it at face value, I don't see that's the case at all. I think that it makes perfect sense for him not to be recorded in history. I think it makes people get lost in history all the time, especially back then. Things weren't documented quite as well. There are plenty of people that have died that have seemingly never existed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not an issue for me. Anyway, that's my take on that.
She could have saved a finger. It would have been brittle at the time.
That's true.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Or just carried his carcass around by its hair.
Yeah. Instead, he sunk, which doesn't really happen to bodies.
Like a bitch. All right, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, so we've already revealed my number three and my number one. So all that's left is number two. Number two. Number two, Aladdin takes place in the future.
I saw this one too.
Yeah, it's a pretty old one.
Yeah.
And all of it has to do with the fact that Robin Williams was allowed to say basically anything he wanted in the sound booth.
Right.
And so he was making all these pop culture references to other Disney movies, the theme park, Rodney Dangerfield, Jack Nicholson. All of these things are addressed. And I don't think there's enough. I just don't think there's enough. All the best timelines that I can find place the story of Aladdin happening in the Middle East around the year 800.
Yeah, and you, I got something to say on this real quick, if you don't mind.
Okay. No.
What is more believable in my mind is that's a goddamn genie, and he's probably connected to the universe in ways that we don't understand, and therefore knows what happens in the future. And is connected in weird ways. And just that's just him projecting what he knows.
As a matter of fact, the genie actually makes reference to the fact that he's capable of time travel.
There you go.
Because he says, you're not going to find another girl like her. And he mentions the span of time, I think, in like a million years. And he says, believe me, I've looked.
Right.
He also boasts unlimited cosmic power, which suggests that he can manipulate space-time.
Itty-teeny-bitty little space.
Yes.
Yeah.
A genie could potentially, in an effort, and if there are genie rules, if we're going to say that, if there are genie rules, then genie, in order to create these magnificent effects and come up with plans that adequately solve the problems of his masters, he could say, okay, right now I need to stop time or travel through time and come back one second in my current future, meaning mm-hmm. that he could stop time, manipulate time, travel through it in any time that he teleports in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, all of the experiences that he gains, he might be doing so because Aladdin is a lenient master, you know, because the genie, he does get fussy with Aladdin. He does disappear for certain parts of the story
while
he's still technically out of the lamp. So in that time, he could have gone to any time period for any length of time, as long as he came back within a close proximity to when he left.
Yep.
Yeah, so
boom, busted.
People are just trying to. It's magic, okay?
Yeah, just get over yourself.
That's all I got. I hope that everybody enjoyed this installation of the War Pod. Do not forget to check out Extra Life. That's going to be 8 a.m. November 7th, all the way to 8 a.m. November 8th. We're going to be streaming the entire time. Feel free to tweet us, you know, call us if you have our personal numbers and things like that. We would just love for you guys to hang out with us. And don't forget.
And one of us may not live to the end.
That's true.
You get to witness that. That'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm. And also don't forget to check out our team page on, extra-life.org, I believe.
That is true.
And if I'm messing that up, you will always be able to find links below. And now I think it's time to say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Hey, Warlocks. This is Johnny DeMagin. Just a couple words after the episode here. If you did enjoy the episode, please go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/warpod. There, for as little as $2 a month, you can get exclusive content and help support our podcast. Also,
It really helps us out a great deal when you go over to iTunes and you actually rate our show. 5 stars helps us out a tremendous amount and gets us more exposure and helps us grow. If you're using iTunes or any other service that you can actually subscribe to the podcast on, please do that. That does help us out a lot. And of course, we are on YouTube as well. We do Let's Play videos and all kinds of cool stuff. You can find us just by typing in as one word, Warlocks, Games, and Beer. And of course, liking and subscribing really helps us out a lot there as well. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at Warlocks Brew. And if all that stuff is just too much to remember, just go to our website at warlocksentertainment.com. Thanks a lot, everybody.